Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Ramblecast. I'm your host, Chris Cesarano, and joining me are brand new people for the most part. Actually, welcoming back, because I think you were there for the first episode, or first episode or two, my good friend Sean Clouser.
Hey, how's it going?
And then joining us for the first time is my friend in real life, Stephen. Do you want me to say your last name?
Why not?
Stephen Costas.
How's it going?
So, this was actually originally supposed to be another issue of my Norwood Film Club where we were discussing Scott Pilgrim, but due to various circumstances, that had to get pushed back, and I didn't want to go another week without an empty update, so we're just going to be discussing, for the most part, things we've been, like, the games we've been playing and stuff, which is kind of funny because I actually just got done watching a movie that I kind of want to talk about, but probably shouldn't spend too much time on because, you know, it's not a video game.
I had no idea that you did a movie podcast, too.
It's all, I'm trying to do it to make sure I have more updates. I'm trying to have more regular episodes, and I feel like it's usually, for the most part, it's a different group because it's my friends locally that I managed to bring together, and we just all talk in my room and record instead of doing it over Skype.
Yeah, that's cool. And
it allows me as well a chance to kind of just discuss more things that I'm interested in. So yeah, I like to do the film and the video game simultaneously, back and forth. But I haven't really gotten much feedback on it either way. So until I do get feedback, I'll just probably keep doing it.
Yeah,
which is probably the opposite of what most people do. I don't think any of our actual gameplay, like what we've been playing, has synced up. So it ought to be very interesting to hear. I do know we all have PlayStation 4s, so
yes.
That is happy for me. Now that I have a new next-gen system.
You're going to say, now that I have a real console.
But you know what? That's completely untrue because the Nintendo Wii U still has the best games, or at least the best unique ones. Considering that like one of the first games I got for... Actually, yeah, I got... The first several games I got for the PlayStation 4 were all HD remasters of some sort. It came with The Last of Us Remastered. I got the Tomb Raider remastered version for cheap. Mm-hmm. And then I bought DMC Devil May Cry Definitive Edition, which I just got through the DLC of today, and that's one of the things that I've been playing a lot of recently. And did either of you guys get to play the new DMC when it came out?
Yeah, I played it on PS3.
I started it. I got just a little bit in. I got it on the PlayStation Plus.
And you know what? That's actually probably the roughest part to get through because one of the things I learned replaying this time around was, honestly, this game makes a bad first impression all the way around. Because, like, I started playing again, and I'm sitting there like, maybe getting the Definitive Edition was a mistake because the opening few levels are not that interesting because you gotta slowly gain all the new abilities and everything, and mm-hmm. The game doesn't really open up until you get all those abilities. Like, it really begs for replaying it, especially on harder difficulties, because the different weapons and abilities and attacks, those are what really make the game really fun to come back to.
I was going to ask, does it feel like something's missing? Like while you're playing the game, I know that you've played through it once already or whatever, but whenever you're playing through the game, you know, they have all these new abilities you have to unlock, so it seems like you just have a very limited action set. Does it feel like there's something missing while you're trying to do all these moves, therefore you're doing the same moves over and over and over while you get through the first part of the game?
Early on, yes, because all you really have is your basic sword, and while there are more abilities to unlock, it's basically once you get the scythe, the axe, and then you also get the two variants of the chain, that's where you have all you need to start to open up the combat in the game. Everything else is just little bits of adding on to it. And then they have two more weapons to add in, which when I first played, I didn't really think there was much purpose to them. but I actually really like them over the original weapons you get, even though those original weapons still have their own kind of purpose. So the game does, it is a good job for trying to give a sort of, here's an introductory to these hardcore sort of game, like for the experienced player that already, you know, plays a lot of games but might not be into these higher difficulty, combo heavy action games, like the kind that Platinum make or the kind that Devil May Cry originally was. And technically the new one is like that as well, but one of the big things about the Definitive Edition is they added a hardcore mode as well as a turbo mode, which modify it to be closer to the difficulty of the original Devil May Cry games.
What's each mode? Hardcore is you die and you're dead forever?
Oh, no. Nothing like that.
I mean, that's how I view hardcore now, since all these indie titles have made, you know, the roguelike elements, taken it to that extreme, I guess. But
yeah.
Okay, so what's hardcore and what's turbo?
Hardcore mode essentially just... Hardcore rebalances the game, so enemies have slightly different AI, and they deal damage differently. So the amount of damage they take and the amount of damage they deal are balanced to be more challenging, basically, okay, without resetting the difficulty, like the basic difficulties do. It's all a sort of it's tweaking it.
Okay.
So if you liked the original difficulty settings that DMC had, they still have that. You just switch on hardcore and it modifies it to be a little bit harder. And then turbo is accelerated a bit. Like the combat moves at a faster pace. So it means, cool. I mean, you're doing things faster, but at the same time, you have less reaction time from the enemies. You have less warning when they come to attack you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I might be in the minority here. I really enjoy DMC. I never found the original Devil May Cry to be that hard, but I'm also not that good at that genre of game. But I mean, at least compared to, say Ninja Gaiden or the PS2 Shinobi game, Devil May Cry really didn't really knock me out with difficulty. Devil May Cry 3 was awful, but maybe that's where I disconnect with the rest of the Devil May Cry fans. And I like DMC, and everybody else thinks Devil May Cry 3 was the better one or something like that. I don't know.
Well, that's interesting, because most people the big agreement is that Devil May Cry 2 is the horrible one.
Right.
Devil May Cry 3, all I really know about is that's the one where it kind of set the stage for, because the original Devil May Cry was still, like, you could tell it was built off of the bones of what was Resident Evil 4. You could tell it was built off of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of exploration and, you know, find this key and put it here and this key and put it, stuff.
And Devil May Cry 3 is where you kind of got the basics of, okay, we're an action game. Dante is a suave jokester kind of character. And, you know, this is the direction of the series. And Devil May Cry 4, which was that was the first one I ever actually played. And honestly, aside from DMC, the only one that I actually played. So I can't really put myself into the shoes of, oh, I am a true Devil May Cry fan. Not really. Because I played Devil May Cry 4, and I played it on easy because I... And that still gave me a bit of a rough time. Granted, I think that was honestly the first action game of that type I really played, too. So, like, after that, you know, the Ninja Gaiden 2, Bayonetta, like, I've slowly been playing more and more of these games, and I'm actually getting better at them and finding a greater appreciation for them. But Devil May Cry 4 was the first in the series that I really played, and I played it on easy at the time, and it was still kind of difficult for me. But I really liked... I mean, I actually liked Nero, which a lot of people disliked him because he wasn't Dante. And I liked Dante's personality a lot, even though I really could not wrap my head around how you were supposed to play as Dante. So that made the second half of the game a greater slog than it already was, because you're just replaying old, like, as much crap as people give the original Halo, Devil May Cry 4 was worse, because at least the original Halo changed the environments a bit because you had the flood and all that other stuff, whereas Devil May Cry 4 is like, yeah, you're just playing the same game, just in reverse. So that was really disappointing. And really kind of frustrating when you're replaying the game again. It's a little bit more difficult by default because, you know, you're further in the game. And then it's like, by the way, here's a completely new fighting style that I guess you just can't wrap your head around after you got so used to playing as Nero. And it's like, well, thanks, game. Thanks for that. That's absolutely lovely. And so, yeah, playing DMC Devil May Cry, it is more accessible because it's not as difficult. I played DMC, and I already reviewed it in on the Ramble Pack, but like the thing that I learned is, like in the opening, there's two factors that it makes a bad first impression, and the first one is, yeah, the gameplay, because it's so slow at the start.
Right.
In a way that I don't even think Devil May Cry 4 was, because Devil May Cry 4, I mean, the games just introduce you to their mechanics with a crappy tutorial all the time anyway. And here, though, it was very slow going. Like, it takes you at least a good hour until you really have all of your abilities and therefore the game's really able to get going. Versus how it should, like, it should be, like, a lot of that stuff is stuffed into the first level, so the first 10 or 15 minutes, trust that the player's gonna adapt real quick, and then just boom, hit the ground running, because it's a lot of those, as the game progresses and you play more and more of these levels, they introduce more enemies, the game just becomes so much more interesting, and the combat, the level navigation, it's all so excellently well done that it almost feels like that beginning part of the game just like wasn't even supposed to be there, was by a different team. Yeah. And
well, I think that's where the accessibility comes in, I think.
At least the attempt at it,
where you're ramping up. You're not just like you said, did you mention Bayonetta before?
I did, and yeah, that's
yeah. Like Bayonetta, I felt like, and I play a lot of games, like I said, I don't play a lot of this particular genre of, I don't know what you call it, like extreme
action,
combo action. Yeah. But like Bayonetta just was totally over my head. I just did not perform well at Bayonetta at all.
Is it because the core, like the kind of foundation of the combat, does it have something to do with where it rests in each one of those games? Like, so Devil May Cry, I'm not sure. I played it was like a year ago whenever I started playing the new one on the PS3, so I can't remember too well the combat, and I didn't get that far, so it's kind of good to hear that it opens up a little bit better, because I thought that I'd really like the game and then I just kind of forgot about it. But like, do you go in and then you have certain abilities that are not presented to you at the beginning that kind of make up the bread and butter later on, whereas a game like Bayonetta, the kind of foundation is built on doing a bunch of attacks and then dodging at the right time to enable your, you know, witch mode, or Ninja Gaiden, where the foundation of the combat rests in the basic, like, attacking and dodging at the right time, rather than having special moves that make the combat everything. It's kind of like everything you unlock in Ninja Gaiden is additive to your combat skill, but you still have to perform at your base level, which is basically just knowing when to attack and when to dodge out of the way, right?
Well, what I was going to say about Bayonetta, I mean, you're actually right, because Bayonetta, it's not even about, you know, getting a bunch of attacks and then dodging. It's simply about dodging is the core of Bayonetta.
Right.
Is you time that dodge and then you're able to just unleash, you know, hell upon your enemy. And then DMC Devil May Cry is, honestly, if I were to really get down to it, I think DMC Devil May Cry is supposed to be, well, Devil May Cry in general is supposed to be about air juggling.
Right.
I've never been that good at it, so I mean, I'm decent at the games, but like if you watch some of the really good players, they're able to pull off combos in the air that keep them off the ground for so long, and it's like, I can do pretty decently, but everything's moving too fast for me to really do what these guys are doing.
And you can't do that until later in the game, right?
For the most part. You at least need some more of your ability. At the very least, you need those chains as the thing. So,
right.
Yeah. So I think Devil May Cry, if I had to, if I'd like to take a quarterly, not just the air juggling, it's the weapon juggling.
Yeah.
It's, you know, like sword, chain, scythe, sword, chain, like going back and forth and weapon to weapon, and that's how you get combat flow, essentially.
But that's also this Devil May Cry, because I think, like, even Devil May Cry 4 had a little bit of that, because Dante has the different styles, I guess they called them, and I was never good at switching between them. I could never keep track, but I feel like they do a good job with it in DMC Devil May Cry, but you're right, like, the style meter, or whatever, however they put it, like, basically what ranks your combat, you know, C, E, oh no, C, B, A, S, double S, triple S, all of that is kind of, you know, if you use just the same attacks with just the same weapon over and over, you don't get that much of a point boost. But if you keep switching weapons up and dodge at the right time, at the perfect timing, then you'll add to it a lot quicker. Like, it wants you to keep switching your weapons up. So even when the enemies aren't calling for it, yeah, the system is basically designed for you switching between weapons constantly. But it just takes you a while until you get there. And then by the time you're comfortable, like, they have you so set in your ways with the scythe and the axe that I remember by the time I got the gloves, yeah. By the time I got the gloves, I was like, why do I want to use these? I don't.
Yeah.
And I also didn't, you know, the axe I had already upgraded by that point.
Right.
So you reach a point, like, if you're stubborn like me, you're like, I'm just going to stick with the axe.
I'm totally that way unless, like, I really need to change my play style because of a certain situation, then I'm the exact same way.
And that's the thing. I would honestly, it wasn't until I got the Bloody Palace DLC for, because I got it on PlayStation Plus as well originally last year. That's when I first played it. And when I started doing Bloody Palace, that's where I started to experiment a bit more. And even this playthrough, like, there was stuff you can do with the gloves that I wasn't aware of that really help speed up some parts of combat. Those gloves are really awesome, but they're a good chunk of the way through the game. And then that's where they kind of rush you through a tutorial. It's like, by the way, this is how you do this with the gloves, and this, and this, and this. And by the way, now just go play the game. And but again, by that point, you're like, okay, the gloves can do all this, but I'm used to the axe. So it's, I don't know, like, I feel like, I understand introducing that stuff later, but I feel like at the very least, the scythe and the axe should have been there at the very beginning, and most importantly, more than the axe and the scythe are the chains, because they're what send enemies, like, either send you to enemies or bring the enemies to you, and they make combat flow so much faster, and they also open up the platforming segments so much better. It's a completely different kind of platforming, it feels like, because it's not about timing your jump so much. It's about, it's platforming segments where it's more about response time. It's, oh, there's the blue hook I gotta do, so let me hit the blue hook, oh crap, I gotta use the red chain to pull this out under me, then I gotta boost through the air towards the platform, and then jump in, because they have secret doors and secret little trial runs for combat and everything, and every once in a while they have these platforming segments too. And those platforming segments are usually some of the most fun in the game. Like, one entire level is basically built on this platforming stuff. And it's just, like, there's a lot of excellent creativity to this game. There's a lot of stuff in there that I absolutely love. It's just that beginning part is slow, and I'm going to be honest too, like, there are really good elements of a story there, but the first introduction to Dante, the first introduction to the story in general, is
awful.
Like, wait, in the new one? In
the new one. In the new one.
The whole, like, naked Dante, like,
not getting, even just that, like, even like Mundus, like, because I thought about that this time. It's like Mundus is sitting there, like, on the call, like, basically saying, like, I can sink America into the ground. Goodbye, Mr. President. Nice dealing with you. It's like, yeah, whatever. And then he's just like, oh, everything is perfect. but Dante's out there and I must kill him. Dante would have never done anything to Mundus if Mundus didn't try and kill him first.
Yeah, I mean that's like just typical like
video game attempt at the hero's journey, I guess.
It sounds like a kid's cartoon or something, like an old He-Man or something, I don't know. We're evil because we're evil, you know, and I don't know.
Well, he is a demon at the very least, but... And that's the funny thing, is at the very end, he basically tries to pull off a sort of a argument as for what he's doing that is good. And that's the thing, like, I forget how far into the game... I think after the Futurama Slurm level with the succubus and everything, I think after that point, that's where the game's story, it's almost like they got a completely different creative writer. They got a completely different director or writer or something to come on board and was like, all right, Dante's a cock. Let's fix this.
Well, I think part of what it is, it's I'm a big fan of Ninja Theory, right?
Yeah.
Enslaved and Heavenly Sword.
I felt like maybe that first part of the game was them trying to do their best to do Devil May Cry and do Dante and be kind of like tongue-in-cheek, edgy, and whatever else. And then the second part of the game is more like, no, we're Ninja Theory. Like, we're going to, you know, maybe have some actual character development, and interesting characters. Mm-hmm. And they make you care about these people. Like, what was the chick's name? I always forget.
Cat. It was Cat. And I discussed it in my Ramble Pack video. And you know what the funny thing is? Beating the game this time, I suddenly realized... Because I do kind of wish I could go back and rewrite a bit of the original video that I did. Because Cat... They actually did do more with Cat than I gave them credit for. But it's still kind of too hard for me to overlook the fact that here is this shy girl that wants to be inconspicuous, wants people not to notice her and everything, intelligent and everything, not very talkative, not really willing to open up. And she's got a hoodie on, with like a long-sleeved hoodie, but it's unzipped enough to show her boobs, and then it's like short booty shorts. It's like... There's a character disconnect there to me. It's like, if you don't want people to notice you, you're not going to be dressed like that. If you're going to have the hood over your head and be, you know, like, try and hide your vulnerability, then you're not going to be showcasing yourself like that. It does not seem to fit the character. And I got very hung up on that about the character, and I got very hung up on... that there's the one level where it feels like she's very much a simpering little girl. But the thing is, they actually do a lot of good stuff with her. And in one of the very last scenes of the game, Dante, of all people, is actually pointing out all the strength and good actions that she had. So she was actually a better character than I... But again, it's the whole, okay, this is where Ninja Theory decides to actually be Ninja Theory rather than some jerk trying to turn Dante into some kind of Mark Millar 90s comic book hero. I'll keep stop talking for the time being.
It's okay.
So, for someone that's not that familiar with the game but has, like, an interest because they just got their PS4 and this game is, you know, cheaper than a brand new one, how big of a difference are the visuals in the PS4 version versus the PS3? And, like, what kind of – does it include how many DLC packs and what's – you know, you think it'd be worth it if you played it partway through on the PS3 to pick up the PS4 version?
That's a bit of a tough call. I'd say, though – okay. If you – I would say you have two options. You either have DMC Devil May Cry or you have the Wonderful 101. Those are really good examples because they're not too difficult, but they get you used to a lot of the way of thinking and the methodology of these kinds of action games. DMC, when it comes to the definitive edition, and why play that instead of if you already have a PS3 or Xbox 360, why not just pay $5 for a bargain bin copy? I don't know about visuals, because it's been a year since I played Devil May Cry on the PS3. It's definitely got a smoother frame rate, and that is... Actually, I think that's one of the reasons why I think I'm doing better on the PS4 version, is because it's got a smoother frame rate, which might sound silly, but I've been learning that it does make a lot of a difference. It's got the higher resolution, the smoother frame rate. You could tell a lot of the textures are nicer. When it comes to the DLC, it does come with Virgil's Downfall, which I just completed today, which... Playing as Virgil is very interesting because it's not the same as Dante. They have similarities, of course, but it's not the same. So that was actually an interesting experience. They introduced some new enemies, and they kind of lead into a potential sequel to this version of Devil May Cry. Don't know if they'll actually do it, and I think Capcom has been trying to figure that out themselves. But... I mean, you're asking me if it's worth $40, and for me, I could say it was, because I wanted to own a copy of Devil May Cry anyway, and I'm willing to drop the $40 to play this version instead of having to get the original PS3 one. And the Bloody Palace is definitely going to be something that's a lot of fun if you just want to go into something that's like, I have half an hour to kill, let me just slay some demons. Or the levels, like, just the higher difficulties and everything, it is a good package, but you have to care about the fact that it's 60 frames per second and all that stuff. Otherwise, you may as well get the bargain bin copy on PS3. I mean, it's really kind of hard to...
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure how much it is on PC these days, too. The PC version was supposed to be really good as well.
It probably has all the same things that are on the PS4 version as well. So you could always wait for a Steam sale if you have a good enough PC.
Yeah. Cool.
So yeah, that's Devil May Cry. So, Sean, you've been playing a game that I've been hearing a lot about called Helldivers.
Yeah, Helldivers. Helldivers is awesome. So, it's available on PSN only. I think it was published by Sony, so I don't think it'll appear anywhere else. But it's a 4-player co-op game. It's like an isometric, you know, shoot 'em up game, and it's hilarious and fun and frustrating and awesome. You know, it's one of the most fun game experiences that me and my friends have all had in a long time. So I'm really enjoying it. But basically, it's made by the guys who made the Magicka, you know, the Magicka game. So this game has like full friendly fire, and you will kill each other constantly because of just the nature of, I guess, the game design and you know, so you have to be highly cooperative with each other in order to get things done. But the way it works is you're these hell divers and you are like, you kind of represent this future regulated democracy, which is kind of like a joke in itself about, you know, people just love saying, you know, we're for democracy. It's kind of like commentary on a lot of like kind of the way America's government has kind of put values on other countries and said, oh, well, we invaded this country, but, you know, we gave them democracy, so isn't that so great, and all this stuff. It kind of pokes fun of that idea. And so anyway, you know, you don't really play this game for the story or anything, but what it is it's almost similar to like a Diablo 3 adventure mode where you get with your friends and you choose what mission you want to do, and you shoot down to a planet, and then you have to do all these certain objectives while you're in, like, on this planet, and you can see a map and you go around and do the objectives, and you're running around, all 4 players are on the same screen, and you have all these different weapons, all these different guns, full friendly fire, but then you also have these things called stratagems, and what you do is you hold one of the buttons down, I think it's L1, you hold the L1 down, and then you have an input that you have to do, and depending on how like major of a stratagem it is, it has like either a really long input where you have to press up, down, left, right, you know, you can see what that defaulted to, right? That's where my brain goes. But yeah, you have to press all these different arrows in a certain order to call your stratagem down. And then you hold this grenade of that stratagem and you throw it. And then depending on what it is, like let's say it's an ammo pickup or like a a grenade launcher or whatever for someone to use. It shoots down onto the ground in a pod, and you can smash people with it. You can smash enemies. You can smash tanks with it. It's like really, it'll one-shot most stuff. And so you have to like always be aware of what your friends are casting and where they're throwing them and stuff, or else like if you're standing underneath it, then you'll, you know, get crushed by it. And it's even to the point where they'll have, if you call down like a minigun turret, it'll, you know, you have to do these objectives where you have to defend a oil depot or something like that for a certain amount of time. And so you'll, you know, call down all these turrets and stuff to like help defend for you, and all these enemies, all these bugs or whatever you're fighting will start coming to get you. And the turret will automatically like find the bugs, and it spins around in a circle and like will shoot at them, you know, with badass, you know, chain gun, and it will shoot you if you're in the path of the bug and the gun. So you have a dive ability where you can go prone. You like dive onto the ground, and the gun will shoot over your head. And that's also really good for whenever your friend's in a mech or something, and he needs to take out tons of bugs. He's just like, go prone, and you'll dive. He'll shoot right over your head and take out everything. And it's just really, really fun. It's some of the most fun I've had in a long time. So,
have you been playing with a lot of public people, or have you been playing with friends online?
I'm playing mostly with friends. I had to convince all my friends to buy it. This is like, like me and my friends, we have like, it's almost like a game of games. We like try to convince each other to buy all these games so we can all play together. And we're always on the lookout for like that special game, you know, where it's like the ultimate co-op experience and stuff. And it's so much fun. We keep wanting to go back, and this may be it for a long time. So I convinced all my friends to buy it. So I've been playing mostly with my friends, but I have played with strangers as well. Like one of the first nights I had the game, I hopped on and jumped in a game with three other guys, and two of them were more experienced, and me and this one other guy, we were, you know, noobs. And so, but we all had our microphones and we were all working together. And the way that the game is designed is I haven't come across any trolls yet. You know, like where you can just shoot each other and kill each other, because there's so much drive and incentive where if you don't help each other out, then you're just not going to have fun yourself. It's just going to kind of end the mission and it's going to kick everyone out. So, you know, I've done, I don't know, quite a bit, I guess, of public play, but, you know, only one instance where I was by myself without any of my other friends. Sometimes whenever we do like some of the harder missions, you can go down to the planet, and if it's like me and just one other buddy, we're like, oh, well, we could use a little bit more firepower. We will call down like an SOS beacon, and then it puts your game at the top of the list for matchmaking, because like the game knows that you're waiting on someone. You're not just like passively idling on your ship. So it kind of, you know, puts you in the top of the quick join menu, if you will. And people, yeah, people will join and play, and you throw grenades, and if you're holding a grenade and you die, you'll drop that grenade and it'll blow up, and you know, there are airstrikes that you call in, and it's really highly cooperative, where, you know, you have like you know, like the bigger enemies are like tanks, so to say. Like they either are tanks or they're these huge bugs that you have to dodge out of the way of a charge and shoot them in the butt, you know, to kill them and knock all their arm off. But like you can get rocket launchers, which will, you know, this is really the only way to kill these things. You either use rocket launchers or you call down like a hellfire, like airstrike or something. And the rocket launchers are cooperative in the sense that you'll call down a rocket launcher and you hold it. If your friend picks up the ammo pack for it, then he can instantly reload your rockets for you. But he has to walk over to you and press X. So there's everything revolves around co-op and killing each other. Like, it's just, it's crazy. I mean, it's crazy how funny it is. I've had two friends now that, like, are my close friends that I play games with all the time. Two of them have rage quit and gotten mad at, like, me and my other friend and just turned off their PS4 and walked away. And we're just like, oh my gosh, like, I've never seen him freak out like that and get pissed off at us, because we were laughing because, you know, they were fucking up, or we were laughing because we accidentally killed them three times in a row, you know, and they thought we were doing it on purpose, you know. So,
oh wow.
It's a lot of fun, though. It is.
So if that's the case, how do you know you haven't found a troll while playing? You just died a bunch of times and didn't realize they were doing it on purpose.
Yeah, you don't, I guess. I don't know. I mean, it really is a bloodbath. Once there's four people on the screen and you're all shooting. I mean, you have to be really smart about the direction that you're covering and that you're not shooting someone in the back of the head or calling down things on top of their heads or whatever. And it's fun. It's like, I don't know, there's something special about like Grand Theft Auto whenever you play online with your friends and you can't help but smile, you know? Like, have you, either of you all played GTA Online?
Nope.
No? Nah, okay.
I haven't.
So, I don't know. I guess anyone that's played this would know what I'm talking about. But even just driving around with your friend, something will happen where, like, you'll be driving really fast down the street, and you'll bump up on a curb and lose control of the car and flip it over a whole bunch and then, like, smash into a grandma or something like that. And you'll both just start, like, laughing your ass off. You know, like, it's something that's kind of dumb and really simple what happened, but the way that it kind of happened in the game and you were both there and you kind of both saw the same thing happen, it's just really funny and you just can't help but like laugh your ass off. This is, the Helldivers is one of the only other games where I've experienced that type of like stupid, giddy, like I'm losing at this game, but it's making me laugh my ass off because, you know, I called in reinforced, like my friends died and I called in to respawn them and the countdown happened and I hit the atomic bomb and the timer started counting down and right whenever they crawled out of their pod to live again because I accidentally killed them once, they blow up from the bomb and it's just so funny, you know? Like that stuff happens all the time. And so if you have a couple friends that are like interested in and you know, something like this, it's very well worth your time and playing. And they have a really like robust like setup for your equipment and stuff. So they have a lot of different guns, they have a lot of different stratagems, you know, they have ones that are supportive where you have drones that you throw out to help you navigate the map a little easier. They have ones that, you know, are gun turrets that you call down, ones that are ammo packs and jet packs for your friends, and like I said, the rocket launchers that you have to work with someone in order to, you know, use it efficiently. And there's so many different setups where it's really fun just kind of learning the game and learning like how your friends are playing and what is the best setup for that situation. And like, I guess what I mean by that is that whenever you go to a planet, you have like three missions that you have to do before you complete a planet. And then you usually get like a reward. And those rewards are either like new rocket launchers or bonus XP or something like that. Well, as you work your way through the planets, you'll do the first planet. And once you finish it, you'll go, man, we got through that, but it'd be so much easier if I got rid of my gun turrets and picked up the mech suit, you know, or we don't need the mech suit anymore. We need jump packs to get through the swamp faster. And you kind of gear your equipment through each planet to kind of find the perfect solution to like doing it, you know, like it's something that whenever we were talking about Devil May Cry, I was wondering, it was like, you were talking about using the same weapons over and over. Now you've upgraded that weapon, so there's no point in switching and you're used to it. Well, Helldivers, it kind of promotes you trying out new setups because they play so differently from each other that it promotes experimentation, you know? So it's really cool.
That's very understandable. It also sounds like it's got, When you're describing like all the like how hilarious the experience is, it makes me wonder if it might have the beginnings of what it would take to make a game that's actually a sincere, you know, a comedic video game, a comedy in the realm of video games. Because the big issue with trying to create a game that is also a comedy is, one, you got to make sure it's funny frequently. Like, nothing gets old, nothing gets tired, and that's the biggest problem is once you hear a line of dialogue once, and then twice, and then 22nd time, and then 52nd time, and on, it becomes less and less funny. And then you also need to make sure that the game is still fun to play, or at least enjoyable, engaging, however you want to put it. And it sounds like Helldivers, what it really comes down to is the mechanics are good, the mechanics are sound, but it's also easy to screw up. And when you screw up, it's like it's a spectacular screw up.
Yeah.
But at the same time, is the penalty for screwing up, like is the cost of failure high or is it a low cost of failure?
It depends. I mean, if you accidentally kill someone, what you have to then do is be safe yourself enough where you can call down reinforcement pod of everyone that's dead. So you basically hold LB and you type, I think the combination, I've memorized it because I've typed it so many times, is up, down, right, left, up. And if you type that in and then you have a grenade in your hand and you throw it, then I think it's 5 seconds later, everyone that's dead has new pods that come down and they crawl out of their pods and it's like they're starting from scratch, you know? Hmm. So... So it depends. I mean, it's so high in the sense
there's
that...
There's a cause of failure.
Right? Yes. There is in the sense that you can go through a whole mission that's very hard and that you strategically have to, like, plan out your stratagems and who's taking what. Like, who's going to be the ammo guy? Who's going to be the guy that has the rocket launcher and who's going to supply that person with rockets? Who's going to, you know, use this and that, you know? You plan all that. Like, at the harder levels, there's 12 difficulty levels. And it gets really hard really fast. And it's similar to, you know, Diablo 3 or something like that. And so you can get through a whole mission that will take you, you know, 30 minutes and then fail while you're waiting for the ship to come down and pick you up to, you know, evacuate your team. So there is, you know, but it's also, if people die, there's also a sense sometimes that it's not a big deal at all because while you're fighting, you're just like, oops. And then you call them down and it's, they're just like, you're an asshole, you know, and then you just keep playing, you know? So that's, yeah, that's that. But
my one super burning question on any game like this, couch co-op, can you play four people on a couch?
Yes, you can. And you can also play couch co-op with people online. So one of my friends that I haven't played games with in probably 10 years, he has an Xbox, and so we haven't played, but his brother-in-law has a PS4, and his brother-in-law has this game, and he was like, hey, you know, my brother has this game, and, you know, we saw that you were playing it one night, and we should play together. So they did couch co-op, and I joined them, and I was, you know, at my house in California. So you can do couch co-op and play with people online. There's also cross-platform play. So if you buy this game once, you get it on PS3 and the Vita, and then you can play with people on different platforms, on the, you know, PS4 to PS3 and to the Vita. So like that first night that I was playing with, I was the noob and this team was leading me through, like, casting all this awesome stuff. It was all this awesome equipment. One of the guys was on a Vita and he was chatting with us. I was like, holy shit. Awesome. Hmm. You know? So yeah, it's cool.
All right. So basically as soon as this call is over, I'm going to go and, buy the game.
Yeah. If you wanted to try it first, this is what I did with my friends to convince them to buy it. We did share play. And
okay.
Yeah, I started up my second controller. Yeah, we had to fidget it a little bit, but I had to start up my second controller, log in as a profile, then turn off the controller, and then I did share play, and they took the spot of that second player. And, you know, they ran around and played one level, and they're like, all right, let's do this. This is going to be dumb. So.
Nice.
But yeah, even the cover of the game, like if you really look at what's happening on the cover, it kind of really boils down what this game is about. You know, it has the four Marines, they're back to back, all shooting different directions, covering each other. There's like a tank enemy on the horizon, and one of the Helldivers is dying, and he's dropping a grenade in the middle of all four of them, and that's gonna blow up all of those guys and kill them. You know. And but it's pretty neat. Like, so the overall goal was something that interesting that they did is they have, like, everyone plays together online. There's three different factions that you fight. There's these bugs, there's these cyborgs, and then there's like these I forgot what they're called, but they're like the like kind of alien futuristic race, you know, kind of thing. And they all play very different from each other. Well, as a community of Helldivers, everyone that's playing online, you work towards, like, you're in the middle, and you work towards each faction, like, pushing your way out. So whenever you complete a set of three missions, you put forth, like, points towards, like, the community, like, influence towards, like, driving back the aliens away from your home planet. And eventually, last night was the first time I saw this. I've been playing since release. We made it to the alien planet, and it was a whole new tile set. You know, it was similar, but it had some different lighting effects and different things like that. And you fight and try to beat the alien planet, like, as a community. And so there's, like, incentive to, like, do things. And sometimes if people from the community don't fight against a certain faction for a long time, then that faction will work its way towards your home planet. And then you have to, like, you know, you don't have to, but you can participate in defending your home planet kind of thing. And so it's kind of like this online like world of like, you know, it reminds me of Chrome Hounds. I don't know. That's kind of an old game.
No, that was one of the things I was thinking about. There's a couple of MMOs that have tried stuff like that.
Right.
So it sounds very interesting in that regard.
Yeah, it's not too complicated. They're not trying to do anything like spectacular with it, but it is kind of neat to see, you know. So
it also brings to mind whether Sony is going to implement, because I don't think they have yet, if they'll implement something like every once in a while you have a game on Steam that you can buy the 4-pack bundle or something, so it's cheaper than getting all the 4 copies of the game individually.
Oh, that would be perfect for this game.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I'm thinking about it, and especially with how much they're doing independent games, Sony should really implement something like that if they can. But it just means, you know, one person gets a copy locally or something, then other people have to do download keys.
Yeah.
So you have to figure out that aspect.
Well, if they would only allow gifting on the PS4.
There's that, too.
I mean, that is such a simple thing for them to do. That would be huge, because there are games that, you know, they just last night, they started this flash sale on PSN right now, and it's a bunch of
games for $1.
Yeah, odd games under $1. I mean, it's incredible. There's a game that my friend missed out on called Dead Nation, which was free on PlayStation Plus for the PS4. He missed out on it. That's 94 cents. So he finally was able to pick it up, but he had to, you know, come home and buy it. I had to go, hey, that game that I think you mentioned, you know, blah blah blah. I had to like sit there and remember to tell him that this game was on sale, so he'd go buy it and find it and download it, and so we could play together. And
as opposed to just going,
it was 94 cents. Yeah, it was 94 cents. I would have bought him a copy and another one of my friends so he could play with us and just given it to him, you know, and we would have played. So there you go, Sony. You lost out on like 94 cents, sort of. No, but
or at the very least, I mean, it would behoove Sony, I think, to. There are aspects of Steam that they really ought to emulate for their own store. And that and the 4-player bundle kind of a thing, those are some of them. Hey, Steve.
Hey.
You and I both got Final Fantasy Type Zero, but evidently I've been playing the actual game and you've been playing the demo that came with it, like some kind of a jerk that bought Crackdown just for the Halo beta.
Yeah, that's me.
Whoa. Explain to me. So what is Final Fantasy Type Zero? Like, I'd never even heard of this game before. And apparently it's a HD up-resed version of an old PSP game. Is that right?
Yes. Not a Vita game, a PSP game.
Right.
That was never released in the States, despite lots of clamoring.
Yeah, I heard about it first when there was a trailer for it. I don't remember if it was an E3 trailer or a Tokyo Game Show trailer. It could be anything at this point.
Well, what you got to remember, too, is originally Final Fantasy Type Zero was Fantasy 13 Ajito, I believe.
Yeah.
And Final Fantasy 15 was Final Fantasy Versus 13. So these games have been somewhat connected for like seven years.
Since Final Fantasy 13 was announced.
Yeah.
They were going to have their whole big Fabula Nova Crystallis that they eventually Squaresoft was eventually like, okay, we can't do this. We're just giving up.
And this comes with a early access demo of what?
Yeah, it's really, I would say it's significantly more than a demo. It took me about a little over 2 hours to run the whole thing, and I was pretty snappy and quick. I didn't like explore the entirety of the landscape or anything like that.
What game is it?
Final Fantasy 15.
Okay.
So it used to be Versus 13, but they decided it was just Final Fantasy 15 now.
Okay. Gotcha.
And it's the first Final Fantasy I've actually really been interested in since 10. And even 10 I was kind of skeptical because I was an angry little teenager at the time. So Final Fantasy 15 I was really interested in, but more so when I saw the original at TGS or something, the original gameplay or introduction video of Final Fantasy Type Zero, I was just completely sold because it looked gritty, but not in a stupid comic book fashion. Because like one of the, you see this guy, he gets shot and he's crawling, he's about to die, about to get killed by like enemy soldiers of this place that's like being invaded, and all of a sudden his Chocobo comes and like kills guys, and they make the Jacobo look like a war bird, man. It's got like the clothing, the armor is covered in blood, and eventually, like, you see, like, it was all in Japanese, so I didn't understand anything, but you have the guy in Japanese sitting there laying against the Jacobo after it gets shot, and the two of them are dying together, and the guy's, you can tell in Japanese, he's basically, you know, saying all this stuff, and then he's like, no, I don't want to die, and the tone of it, the way it was done, and the way it was shot, like, there was no gameplay, but just that, I'm sitting there watching this, like, I want to play this game. This looks interesting. And I loved going through the beginning of that in the final version of Final Fantasy Type-0. And now I'm not sure what the hell's going on. I don't know what this game's story is. There's crystals, there's nations, you know, the waterbenders, the earthbenders, and stuff, only not quite. And one of the Fire Nation attacks. And there's words being thrown about left and right. Falsi, Lissi, all this other crap. That's from the whole Final Fantasy 13 universe that I hope they ditch after 15. And just, I don't know what's going on. People are saying words all the time. But basically, you're given a squad of 12 characters that are, well, 10 of them are somehow special. Like, they're basically sort of bioengineered with magic. And they're all, you know, in an academy, like a military academy. So they got that aspect of, you know, Japanese entertainment going. They're all kinds of different Japanese anime archetypes. But that's the thing. Like, it's very, very Japanese in a way that might be irritating and then might not. But it's very, it doesn't have that serious tone that for some reason I was hoping would carry the entire way. Even though I know Japanese entertainment, I know anime, I know RPGs, I should know by now that they're going to make it light and fluffy again until, holy crap, here's all this grim bad stuff happening. And everyone's going to question, you know, life, war, what's it for, you know, I don't know. But it's interesting, and I kind of wish there was permadeath, because it's a action-based sort of combat system. It's not turn-based, and you have you swap between the different characters, and you're supposed to keep them at roughly the same level. I'm kind of tempted not to, because even though leveling up can be quick, when you have to level up 12 different characters and you can only have 3 to a party, it still takes a while.
You know, so that whoever you leave behind, they're going to be like a required party member in like 2 missions or something like that.
Well, that's the thing. I completed Chapter 2, and at the end of Chapter 2, they all of a sudden like, oh, here's a new boss. Here are 3 random party members that you have to control now. Other than that,
they Final Fantasy 8'd you.
Basically. Which is funny that you say that, because I know a lot of people are reminded a bit of Final Fantasy VIII, but they're doing a lot of callbacks to Final Fantasy VI. They got Magisite back in there. They got Magitek armor. And even just the idea that these kids are, like, technically genetically manipulated with magic, that's even a Final Fantasy VI thing, considering Terra's character. Hmm. Or Celeste's character, actually. Celeste's character. So they've got a whole bunch of, and it's got the most, the overworld music is the most epic rendition of the Chocobo music ever, which I still can't wrap my head around that. They managed to make it sound epic
version of that.
They managed to make it sound epic rather than silly.
Wow.
So yeah, whoever that composer is, he's actually pretty talented. Or she.
Golf clap.
Yeah.
Excellent. I'll have to actually, I'm planning on playing through the game.
You just played your $60 demo.
I wasn't immediately gripped by it. And then I got the little notification that Final Fantasy 15 episode Dusk or whatever finished downloading, and I was like, okay, I just hit a save point. Let's get out of here.
So you really paid. It's like I bought my $60 demo, and hey, it came with this really nifty HD upgrade of a game.
Something like that.
Well, then and you can tell it's a PSP game. You can tell it's a PSP game with a lot of its presentation, too.
Yeah.
And then, well, then I saw Penny Arcade the next game and next day, and it was like the same thing. Should we talk about the Final Fantasy 15 demo since everyone else in the internet is talking about it?
I haven't played the 15 demo yet. I've actually been kind of conflicted because I feel like once I do, I'm going to play it, and then I'm going to look at Final Fantasy Type Zero, and I'm going to be like, why would I want to play this?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of trying to play the... I want to play through Type Zero first, which that could take me until, like, freaking July, so who knows. Because it's a Japanese role-playing game. I have so many games I want to play.
Yeah. I want to hear about the demo. As someone that hasn't followed Final Fantasy at all since the second one, I'm serious. Yes. I don't even know what to ask about. I mean,
it's strange.
Entourage as imagined by the Japanese.
Yeah. So
okay.
I've seen
the pictures of the guys going through the drive-thrus in their car and stuff.
Yeah, I mean that's basically like there's like. A slightly effeminate guy. There's a smart guy. There's a guy who's twice the size of the other three guys. And then there's the dark, brooding main character. So they all kind of have their archetype that they fit.
And I am working on my doujinshi for this as we speak.
And what's really struck me about the game is more than any other open world game I've played, environments felt like they could be real. Like someone might have just found an actual area and mapped it into a game.
Wow. Yeah, they looked really good. I mean, I've seen some stuff and they look really good, but then you look off into a lake and you see this huge monster.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's crazy.
It wasn't just the graphics, it was just the whole layout and the feel of it, just like the... When you're approaching the highway, just the way everything looks, it's like I can imagine driving on that road and seeing those trees like that and that all sloping down like that. Like that's like a road
experience, like something you have to play kind of thing rather than just looking at still shots or something.
Yeah. It was a little bit, the enemies in the demo I really wasn't a big fan of initially. There's the primary enemy that's going to attack you are like these hyena dog guys. I forget what they're called because I always forget that stuff. Mm. And they are like strike and run. So they're actually really obnoxious to fight because you're like dodge and then chase them down. And you have this teleport attack, which is useful. So you can lock on and teleport attack, but that uses MP. So it just gets really frustrating.
And I heard that the character you play as, Noctis, starts lower level than everyone else, so that's an added layer of frustration.
I didn't find any real frustration in the demo. There was some odd things odd here and there. I didn't feel like he was particularly underpowered in combat or anything like that. Where the demo really picks up is about three quarters of the way through, you go into this cave, and you fight goblins who swarm. And it was just, it was like the most fun I've had in I don't know how long. It has the epic music and the lighting effects. The only way you can see is the light from like a body pack flashlight. It was really tight. The way the light flashes off the goblins, and you just keep on getting surrounded, and they just keep on swarming you, and it was just really fun, and it totally sold me on the game. It's like dumb. It's music, it's good music, and an enemy that swarms you, but for some reason, the whole thing was so well put together. That part totally floored me.
For the feel of the beta, like I've been hearing that it sounds like the game, like the way it feels, the game should still be about a year out from release.
That'd be my best guess. I mean, they've got, obviously they have large portions of the game completed. You just don't know what exactly,
I imagine it's just tweaking and everything like that to make sure the combat works as it should and other things like that.
Yeah, I'm assuming. Hopefully there's some tweaks in the combat into the camera. But none of that's not anything going to make you concerned about the final product that, you know, a year out, they still need to tweak the camera. You know, the big thing, of course, is also the summons. If you haven't gone and watched the video of the summon, if you're not going to play the game, you at least need to go watch a video of the Ramu summon. It was,
what are you talking about?
The summon attack. So after Goblin Cave, you get a summon attack.
Okay.
And I don't even want to describe it for you, just so you're surprised.
It's epic.
It's epic. Okay. It's really
particle
epic.
Effects everywhere.
And well, not just that. The sense of scale. There's a sense of scale you get with it that's just mind blowing. Maybe not mind blowing, but
yeah, it's a good engine that they're building, and I'm hoping that Squaresoft opens it up to more of their studios. But at the same time, I need to see how it runs because once upon a time I didn't care about frame rate and all that other crap, and right now I don't care too much about resolution. Like, if someone's like, "Yeah, we could only get it to 990," and it's like being boosted to 1080p, like I'm not going to freak out.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't care, but I want it to be running at 60 frames a second. So if this engine can have the scale that it does and then be 60 frames a second regularly, then yeah, I'm going to hope that Squaresoft really basically says, okay, every studio that we have, please use this engine because it's awesome and beautiful and runs well.
Yeah.
So I guess that's... Did you have any other questions about Final Fantasy XV's demo?
Yeah, so... What was the last, like, proper Final Fantasy game? It was Lightning Returns? I don't know if you consider that proper, but...
I don't know what is proper anymore in the Final Fantasy series.
Right, right. So, like, this game seems very different from that, right?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, just wanted to make sure, I guess.
Yeah, it's very, very, very much different. I mean, obviously we've only seen one section. I mean, there are some little similarities, like something like dumb stuff, like you can jump. Lightning Returns and, you know, Final Fantasy XV are, to my knowledge, the only Final Fantasy games where you can jump while navigating the environment.
But those games didn't have, the older games didn't have, like, this vast open world that you drive around in and stuff, right? Like, they kind of had more instanced sections that you move through and kill enemies throughout your, you know, going through that area. But okay.
Nothing
where you moved around like this. Well, this is like...
This is also new in that regard. Like,
yeah.
Because, I mean, back before, I mean, it was just, like, the PlayStation 1 and the Super Nintendo, like, you couldn't really do anything like that, or if you had to drive in a car, it would be different. So, that's the thing. Like Final Fantasy X and 13, you reached a point where it's like, okay, next gen development's difficult. How are we going to do these things? And now, like, how big is the world of Final Fantasy 15 going to be? I don't know. You're driving, you're basically on a road trip, but I don't know how big the world's actually going to be. Whereas Final Fantasy games before, you literally traveled the world.
Yeah, here's what I would say that's really encouraging about it from the perspective of, I don't know if I can really call myself an old school Final Fantasy fan. I played the original once on the NES, and then I really got into the series around 7, but I have played back through all the old ones, so I'm something.
You are something.
I'm something. The demo to me felt like the Grand Pulse section of Final Fantasy 13, which most people would agree was the best section of Final Fantasy 13. And this is just some random section they pulled out of the game to show you. So I find that really encouraging.
Nice.
All right.
It's not random. But
it's not random. Nice.
It's a very intentional vertical slice.
Yes. This is true. It's a very intentional slice. But if
it doesn't feel like a one-off section, it feels like a core element.
Right,
I guess.
it feels like the rest of the game should feel something like this. Maybe we'll be wrong, and the rest of the game will be a linear slog. I don't know.
Well, honestly, my biggest interest in it is the combat. Honestly, so that's the biggest reason I want to give the demo a whirl. So I should probably do that sometime tomorrow or in the next week.
Yeah, definitely.
Can I share play the demo?
I don't even know if I have a headset that can reach that far. Because my PS4 is in my living room and I don't have like a wireless headset or anything. I'm going to have to figure that out. Mm. But...
When you have the crappy earbud that came with the system?
I don't even want to... That thing looks terrible.
It is terrible, but it works. yeah, if I ever give you my copy of Destiny, I have another set of decent headphones with a microphone attached you can borrow.
Let me figure out if my current headset would actually work first. All right, now we have hit the 1 hour mark, so technically I should be wrapping up, which is a shame because I did not get to discuss either Resident Evil Revelations 2 or what little I played of Battlefield Hardline today. I will say for a little bit of Battlefield Hardline, I only played the first three, as they call them, episodes, which is going to be, you know, the first couple levels are very short because they're the tutorial. The second level is a little bit longer because it's still getting used to the mechanics. And the third level was actually pretty big and open and very focused on finding a lot of hidden items. And that's the thing. Like, I think they really did try and take the fact that it's a game about cops to heart, in that there are lots of opportunities to actually be very stealthy instead of going in and running and gunning and
get eaten by alligators.
Yes, there is one part where you have to wrestle an alligator and it has quick time events. Fortunately, most of the game has not been like that. But I expect it's going to be like a sense of rising action, but thus far, even though it's like this is not Cops Simulator 2015, it's definitely feeling pretty good. Like it's not just, oh, we're going to shove you into another modern military shooter that just has a new skin. Even though technically you could argue that's what Battlefield Hardline is, what with being based off of the Battlefield engine and all. It feels like Visceral really did try and do something different. They wanted to try and make it more than just a military combat shooter. And right now, I'm enjoying the story, actually. Like, I'm enjoying the writing, even though they are going to some cliched areas already. But you could do cliche and still do it to an extent that's enjoyable. So, of course, I've never played a Battlefield game before, really. This is my first real exposure to it, and I'm not playing the multiplayer yet because, you know, there's assholes out there.
They need arresting, Chris. The assholes need to be arrested.
Clearly. But I'm enjoying what I'm playing of it so far, even though I actually followed the advice of the game designers where you're selected the difficulty and they tell you, you know, this is for casual, this is for, you know, veteran mode is the one that they're like, oh yeah, this is the one that's for people that have played first-person shooters before and experienced players. You know, this is what the team at Visceral likes to play. And you play it and it's like, oh, so in other words, Visceral likes to die a bit. So that's what I'm going through. But it's pretty enjoyable so far. I'm liking it, so. And then Resident Evil Revelations 2, I got to complete. And evidently, I'm going to warn you ahead of time, there is a bad ending and there is a good ending. And it's very easy to screw it up so you get the bad ending. Because I did. Because I missed a button prompt. And
it's based on missing one button prompt?
Sort of, yes. In the third out of four episodes, you do one little thing, and next thing you know, it's like, oh, I got a bad ending. And I didn't realize until, like, you know, looking online, it's like, what did I have to do differently that I could have gotten a better ending? Because it's not like it's a very, like, it's not a game about choices. It's Resident Evil. I mean, they don't do that kind of a thing. So, yes, I got a bad ending, even though, considering the direction the story took, I don't think you could say there is such a thing as a good ending, because it's Resident Evil. This writing is always bad no matter what. And therefore, the ending is bad. No, but, the story for Resident Evil Revelations 2, after Episode 3, I came up with a theory for the game's story. This technically happened with Resident Evil 6 as well. And I constructed, oh, this is what's going to happen. This is how, like, what the enemy's motivations are. This is what the game's story is all about. The problem with that, and I acknowledged this at the time that I came up with it, is that I thought of something that actually makes sense and is not too convoluted. But this is Resident Evil we're talking about. Therefore, the story cannot make sense and it has to be really ridiculous and convoluted. So, needless to say, I was completely wrong about the direction Revelations 2 was going, and the story is complete crap. But it was a very, very enjoyable game to play. I think it is the easiest Resident Evil yet, for the most part, but I really enjoyed the gameplay nonetheless. It was challenging without being too much of a challenge, and while I do kind of wish I had a co-op partner for a lot of it, I feel like the two-partner system was actually executed the best here, because you could swap between the players at any time, and each player has different functions. The one character is very combat-oriented, and the other is very support-focused. The second character can look for and find hidden items in the environment, can find hidden emblems, and they can stun enemies in some way or fashion. Or they can also, well, one of them is able to stun enemies, the other is able to spot them through, like, walls and stuff. So there's a lot of teamwork involved. There's a lot of, you know, if you're playing single player, swapping back and forth between the two characters. But it would work better if you had the couch co-op going on, and the nature of the characters, you could just have the second player, someone that's less experienced with these games, but they don't have to worry about killing stuff. All they have to do is just know to point the flashlight or the girl's finger in some direction to communicate and to occasionally whack someone with a crowbar or throw a brick at them, and their job is done. And that's what makes this game great, is either you're playing it single player or you can play it co-op, and they actually do really well mixing the two elements together. So it feels very classic Resident Evil. They definitely do callbacks to a lot of the previous games. It definitely feels more like the Resident Evil 4, 5, and 6 era of game design, but it's much closer to 4 and 5 than it is to 6. So Resident Evil Revelations 2 gets my thumbs up. I really enjoyed it, and if you liked Resident Evil 4 or 5 in any way, shape, or form, I would highly recommend checking out Resident Evil Revelations 2. So, that's all I've got to say on that matter. Did you guys have any questions for either Battlefield or Resident Evil?
Nope. Yeah.
Nope. Alright, then it sounds like we're wrapping up. So, alright guys, as usual, you can find me at www.gamertag.net, or you could go to youtube.com/user/RumblePack64, or you can find us on iTunes. And of course, you can also go to facebook.com/RumblePack64, where it would be very helpful if you like the posts you see there, and even share them, and of course like the page, because the more people like it, the more it will not only show up in your feed, the more other people will see it. Like, the more other people, even people that like the page, the more they'll see it, because Facebook is really weird with how it promotes material. So go like the page and everything. If you want to, you can subscribe to me on Twitter, even though I don't really do much there. It's twitter.com/CCesarano. You can find all of these links and how to and spellings at, again, www.gamertagged.net. And Sean, do you have any website to be linking to?
No, I don't. You can find me at my house. My address is... No, I'm just kidding.
And Steven, I know you are actually a musician, man, so you should have plenty to link to.
Yeah, you can check out my band. We play progressive rock and occasionally sing about robots. So that when, is...
What is the projection of that new album?
Who knows? we've got it half written, so hopefully that's not like developer speak, which means that it'll be out in 3 years. It'll be out sooner than that. You can check us out. We're called the 20 Committee. All like spelled out, not like the 2-0, like the 20 Committee. Our website's the20committee.com. You can find us on Facebook as well. And I know that doesn't really have anything to do with video games, but you should check us out anyway.
Cool.
All right. So thank you very much for listening, everyone. And guys, thank you very much for joining me.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you, Chris.
So join us in the future when we talk more video games or movies. All right. Thank you and have a good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.